This call is being recorded.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining the call. And my name is Sierra Dahl. I will be your host for today with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum. We have three people who are presenting today from three different universities across the country. Michelle Halsell from Pennsylvania State University, Sherry Gruder from University of Wisconsin, and Myra Moss from Ohio State University. And all three of these people are involved in working with communities on different aspects of sustainability and renewable energy. So, Sherry, why don't you go ahead and start us out and tell us a little bit about what's happening in Wisconsin.
Sure. In Wisconsin right now, there are two main areas in terms of the energy arena. We are also doing work in sustainability, but I'm just going to focus on energy in my brief comments. We can talk about the other later. Two areas of education that I've been focusing on because I've seen a need for it, and also as a way to reach municipal officials to help them realize that they have opportunities and tools to make changes toward a clean energy economy and how that would help them locally. So the first thing is that I just published a guide, and it's called Solar Energy Financing Guide, Empowering Wisconsin Local Governments. I sent the link to Sierra. Right now I have a temporary link, and is that something you're going to make available to folks, or should I just say what the link is?
No, I can't send it out, but I won't send it out until probably the final link is ready.
Okay, that's fine. So anyway, the guide is about ways that local governments can finance solar projects on their own property, whether it's buildings or their land, and also how they can help finance programs that will enable their local businesses and residents to install solar. And so each section has information about that particular structure or that particular approach, and their things, and this is municipal, tribal, and schools. We have a lot of tribal work going on in Wisconsin in energy efficiency and renewable energy. And so there's information about direct buy and public-private partnerships and third-party financing. And then in terms of financing residential and solar or commercial solar, there are topics including solar group purchasing, community solar gardens, a solar co-op model, PACE, and et cetera. And then there's a section on government actions that facilitate solar. And then there's a mention about microgrids. So that the guide is available for people to use. We're partnering with the state energy office for providing grants now to communities. And they're also using this, and they're doing some energy, clean energy planning. And then we just completed a workshop to local government officials, and we had 80 attendees from around the state, and it was very positive. And then the other area that I'm working on, just to be brief, is the impacts of our changing climate on the economy. So it really focuses on energy economics. And this was prompted by a state extension educator, a local one, in one of the northern counties that, you know, don't necessarily believe in the science of climate change, about what are the impacts on our local economy. And so I put together a program that I'm going to put a template out for and put the presentation out for with copious references on it so that anybody can use it, about how to approach this and how to teach it. And the whole the approach that I used, and I did go up and do this up in northern Wisconsin, and we got quite a bit of feedback. I didn't wear a bulletproof vest, and I didn't get gunshots in my license plate, so it was good. And starting off by getting them to talk about what are their local assets, what matters to them, and then what have they seen about changing climate and how that has impacted those assets, the things that matter to them. So when you bring it home and really focus on what's going on locally, you're not talking about the science of climate change, and you're not talking about anthropogenic climate change. You're talking about what matters to them and how they're being impacted. And then it focuses on energy economics from clean energy jobs, both energy efficiency and renewable energy, both in our state and then in neighboring states, the amount of money going out of the local economy to purchase fossil fuels. And then I do a calculation, and I can do this for any community, about the money leaving their specific municipality that's leaving their local economy to go out of state to purchase fossil fuels. And then from there, it discusses climate risk for their businesses, climate and health, and then where to invest, and converting the fossil fuel-based energy infrastructure to a primarily renewable energy infrastructure, noting that it's a big feat, but explaining how it's really doable and that how it's actually happening right now. So I would say those are two main thrusts of how we're approaching people on a very localized basis so they can wrap their heads around it. The Solar Energy Financing Guide has multiple case studies from municipalities and tribes and school districts about what they've done under each of those categories. And so aside from technical information, they also can see that it's been done here. And that makes a big difference because there are a lot of national guides or even regional ones. But I think when you create ones that really hit home, they're much more able to relate. And there's always a competitive thing going on between municipalities. Well, if they're doing it, we could do it, you know. And then they tweak it for their own local circumstances because everything is local. So I think that's all I'll say for right now.
It's impressive if you can get 80 cities in Wisconsin to attend that type of a seminar. So good job. So, Michelle, do you want to talk a little bit about what you're doing?
Sure. So just as a reminder, universities and colleges are usually located in or near a sizable community, whether it's a city or a suburb or a mid-sized town. And those communities may have signed the U.S. Conference of Mayors Climate Protection Agreement, or they may have established a sustainability or climate action plan that they're trying to implement. Universities, as a reminder, have three main functions: research, teaching, and outreach, all of which can be leveraged in service to dealing with climate change. And universities are also making their own commitments to address climate change and greenhouse gas emissions. If you don't live in this world, then you might not be aware that the American College and University President's Climate Commitment was launched in 2006. And by 2010, 697 colleges and universities had signed that commitment, pledging to achieve carbon neutrality. So cities are moving in this direction. Universities are doing their part. Here at Penn State, the Sustainability Institute is charged with integrating sustainability across the main functions of the university: research, teaching, operations, and outreach. Another important trend that I think plays into this is a trend towards engaged scholarship and service learning. Colleges and universities recognize that student learning is enhanced when students have an opportunity to apply what they've learned in the classroom to real-world situations. This trend represents an opportunity for local governments to engage with colleges and universities to address the challenges posed by climate change. So at Penn State, we are investing heavily in this model, this pedagogy of engaged scholarship, and we're also committed to integrating sustainability into our research, teaching, and outreach. And that's where the program I run comes into play. I run a program called the Sustainable Communities Collaborative. We sit at the intersection of student-engaged scholarship, community outreach, and sustainability. And we're not alone. We're not the only ones doing this. Penn State is part of a larger network of universities that are actively working with local communities to address their sustainability challenges and needs. This was started by the University of Oregon. It's called the Sustainable City Year. I don't know if y'all are familiar with it. They demonstrated success in their program, and then they began inviting other universities to join them. And so now there are 18 universities that are part of this thing called the EPIC Network. EPIC stands for Educational Partnerships for Innovation in Communities. It includes the University of Minnesota, University of Iowa, University of Wisconsin-Madison, Texas A&M, University of Tennessee, University of Connecticut, University of Washington, University of Colorado, Cal State Fullerton, Fresno State, and the College of New Jersey. Penn State launched its program in 2013-14. So we've been doing this for 4 years. And in 4 years, 1,085 Penn State students have worked on with 24 different community partners on 99 projects related to sustainability. The projects address a wide array of sustainability topics, including energy, water, waste, local food systems, alternative transportation, and social justice issues like affordable housing. We've worked with the Borough of State College to address climate change even before we established this program, starting in 2006-2007. Faculty and students here at Penn State in the Geography Department conducted the first greenhouse gas inventory for the Borough of State College. Those same faculty and students produced a set of recommendations for policies and programs to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, which informed the borough's first sustainability plan. In 2015-16, we updated the borough's greenhouse gas inventory. I mean, this is not something, you know, cities are doing this every 5 years or, you know, they've got some sort of cycle established, but they don't necessarily have a greenhouse gas expert sitting waiting at a desk for this, you know, to come around. So this is an important role that colleges and universities can play for local governments. We've worked with the borough on a wide array of projects related to expanding renewable energy, promoting energy efficiency, and we're helping them update their sustainability plan for 2017 to 2021, which should yield many more projects for our students to tackle in the coming years. I would say that we also rely on a couple of other tools that I think are really important that colleges and universities should be aware of. Beyond a city's own sustainability or climate action plan, you can look at state and national programs. So we use the Star Community Rating Index here in working with communities, and we also use a statewide program called Sustainable Pennsylvania. These statewide programs are currently in 14 states, including California, Connecticut, Florida, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Virginia. So Wisconsin, you guys keep coming up, right?
Yeah.
It's a great thing. There's also a regional program in Georgia that primarily serves communities in the Atlanta metro area. Sustainable Jersey has perhaps one of the most robust programs. They have 477 certified communities. Here in Pennsylvania, we only have 66 certified communities, but our program is a lot younger. So that's a lot of communities that colleges and universities could reach out to and work with and try to support what they're doing, what those communities are doing on climate change, while, you know, enhancing educational outcomes for their students. You know, the STAR, I don't know if y'all are familiar with the STAR Community Rating Index, but it's a national program. There are 60 cities in the U.S. that are STAR certified. I'm guessing that almost every one of them has some sort of college or university in it nearby or in the city proper. It's divided into seven broad categories. The one most pertinent to this conversation is the category titled Climate and Energy, which is further subdivided into seven discrete topics, including climate adaptation, greenhouse gas mitigation, greening the energy supply, industrial sector energy efficiency, resource-efficient buildings, resource-efficient public infrastructure, and waste minimization. And STAR is getting ready to release a guide to climate mitigation and adaptation for cities. So those are just some of the things that, you know, we look at when we're working with local communities, and I think that this town-gown relationship of universities and colleges leveraging their students and all the skills and knowledge that they bring to help cities do things they couldn't do otherwise, expanding their capacity, I think it's an important trend that we will see growing in the years to come, and I'll stop there.
I think you're totally right. That's excellent. That direction to go, and I've been thinking about that for a long time as well. I know a lot of universities that are working with their local cities and towns and have had a lot of good progress. So, Myra, why don't you tell us what's going on over in your area, Ohio State.
And I'm with OSU Extension, and our mission is to engage people to strengthen their lives and communities through research-based educational programming. So basically what we do is take the research that's either generated by Extension colleagues or people in the departments and throughout the university, and help local communities, individuals, and businesses and residents, local leaders, make sense of it so that they can actually improve their own lives. So that's kind of the 30,000 foot level description. But in renewable energy and energy efficiency, we've been involved for quite a few years. And what we're doing now is, or what we have done and what we're doing now is really one of our efforts is sustainable planning for communities that are impacted by different types of energy development. So we've looked at utility scale solar and wind in Ohio, which a number of years when we developed our program was happening all over the state, and because of regulatory changes, it kind of slowed down a little, but we're also starting to see some major uptick in that development. So we're hoping this program can, you know, help local communities. And basically what we're doing through this program is building decision-making capacity for community leaders, businesses, and residents. Our emphasis is twofold. The first thing is we're trying to help these groups understand what utility scale wind and solar development is and what the considerations, the social, economic, and environmental considerations are for placement of these installations, which would be large scale, utility scale wind and solar throughout the state. So we're helping to educate them on what are the environmental requirements, things like migratory bird patterns, soils, topography, surrounding land uses, those sorts of things. And to bring people in to look at their counties that might be ripe for this kind of development and actually help to make decisions about where it would be logical for these installations to be located. We also look at economic impacts, temporary and permanent jobs, substantial tax revenues, which when agreements are reached between the county and the utility that or the developer, that there can be substantial tax revenues coming into the county jurisdiction. We also look at regulatory approval process through Ohio Power Siting Board and how that works, and social impacts such as view sheds, community acceptance, surrounding neighbors, those sorts of things. So the idea is to help community leadership and residents prepare for this utility scale wind and solar, to understand how they can develop local policies and also do local land use planning, which will help this to happen in the most beneficial way possible for their community. Another one we're looking at is, again, preparing communities for energy impacts. And I hate to say this, we focused in on shale because, like Pennsylvania, shale has been a huge impact in the state of Ohio, particularly in eastern Ohio, but also throughout the state in terms of pipeline development, that sort of thing. The point is with this, though, that it can be used by any community that is facing any kind of energy development, and how they would make sense of that and how they would prepare proactively for that kind of energy development. And what we use is a sustainable comprehensive planning approach. So again, it involves education of local community leaders, businesses, and residents. We usually partner with an organization like the Regional Planning Association, county commissioners, economic development organizations at the local level, and help them develop a comprehensive plan that would address the impacts of that development. And the most important part about it is it incorporates sustainable development cornerstones into that planning, which most of these communities have never done before. Many of them have never done before. So it's inclusion. It's like, how do you engage community residents? How do you develop a long-term vision of the future, something that the community shares? How do you look at future generations, push people to think out 50 years? How do you link social, environmental, and economic sectors and impacts with a more holistic approach? And then how do you develop multi-dimensional goals? So what we've developed for both of these programs are templates that can be used by communities in their actual planning processes with modules and educational sessions and, you know, just basically explaining and developing a model for using sustainable community planning. We also are involved with distributed energy generation, and we've developed a solar electric and investment analysis tools and bulletin series, because what we're seeing is that PV panels are becoming increasingly common sight on urban rooftops and rural properties and on farms throughout the state of Ohio. So what we're looking at is how do you actually analyze your cost-benefit analysis to make sure that this is something that would work for you, and you know, what are your years to return on investment. We also have a website called, where a lot of these programs are located, called energizeohio.osu.edu. So it not only includes this curriculum and some of our youth development programs, but it also includes, I don't know whether you're familiar with Desire, D-S-I-R-E, which is a national website, which includes things like state policies, incentives, grants, tax incentives. And we also have those on our site so that somebody, an individual or a community or whomever, business, could look this up and find out, well, what kind of low-interest loans are the utility companies offering? Or what kind of tax incentives are there either at the state, you know, at the state or local level to help us with this development of either energy efficiency or renewable energy installations? So that's basically what we're doing through Extension. Just briefly, I'm going to mention we do have a major called EEDS, which is Environment, Economy, Development, and Sustainability, and it's a multidisciplinary major that started out as a minor a few years ago and was so popular that it's now a major. And they do a capstone course, which I'm going to be involved with this coming fall, where they actually work with a community to help them implement portions of their sustainability planning. So, for instance, Columbus, the city of Columbus, is now one of the smart cities. They did win that designation, that grant, and they also have a huge ODOT grant. So they're looking at their transportation networks and how they can more effectively transport people from the suburbs to the downtown using public transportation, different kind of transportation methods, also look at alternative transportation methods within the city itself. And many of the students have worked on various parts of those projects. So that's what's happening at OSU.
Okay. Overwhelming amount of information. You guys are doing some amazing things, and I'm sure David has some feedback on this too. He's also involved with this. So we're going to open it up for anybody to ask anybody questions. So just dive right in. I'm sure you each have questions for each other, and go ahead, just whatever. Come on, guys.
Sarah, how many people are on the line?
Probably not very many. It's about
Evan
5 or 6.
Here.
Oh, Evan. Okay, so you're the unknown caller then. Okay. And David K.
Skype after being in on the iPhone.
Yeah. No, I see that. So.
So I turned off one phone and went to the other one and got on.
Yep, I saw that you did that. That's okay. So go ahead and ask questions. David, do you have questions?
Well, firstly, I'd probably like to follow up with everybody who just presented individually to get more references, and I assume that we have contact information for everybody, Sierra?
Yeah, it's all online on mseforum.com. Go under Connect, okay. And then Meet the Leaders. Everything's there.
Okay, well, I would love to share all the resources that were just mentioned with more people in New York. It's kind of one bottom line, and possibly, you know, follow up in ways of sharing that might go beyond just links to websites. But, you know, we're doing, in New York, we're doing a lot of the same things. One of the questions I have kind of to everybody is, the connection between your extension system, the support within the extension system for what you're doing, and the research and teaching side of the university, because everybody sounds like they've got some integration, but it'd be interesting to hear more about how that evolved and how strong the support is from different parts of the university for what's going on. And I would also include in that the difference between the academic side and the institutional side of the university.
Well, anybody? Please go ahead and state your name first so we all know who's talking.
This is Sherry in Wisconsin. I'm a statewide specialist for UW Extension, and so the idea of that, for those who aren't familiar, is that in Wisconsin, we have, you know, it's called different things in different states. We have what's called the Wisconsin Idea, which brings the university to the people. And as a state specialist, we are the university-based faculty who specialize in different areas and then interface with the county-based faculty in the counties, 72 counties in our state, to bring that education, expertise, materials, resources to them locally. And so I think that our extension really integrates very well between campus and base faculty and extension. We have a wiki, Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change, which is campus-based, you know, all the science and graphs and information about what's happening with our changing climate and et cetera. And we have multidisciplinary teams and work groups and project groups. So we have a sustainability group as part of a wiki working group that I'm on with some extension folks, many campus-based faculty from everything from the medical school for the health impacts to, to extension and to the economic people, look at the economic side of it. So we have a number of kinds of integrated approaches happening. We also have one of the co-chairs of that group was the head of our Department of Urban and Regional Planning on the Madison campus. And so we also interact with them in terms of helping to place students in local projects. So there's, I would say the integration is great. There's a lot happening. Everybody recognizes the expertise of the others, and more over time we're working more as a team and a multidisciplinary team with our different strengths. We all realize that, you know, we have different strengths and resources to bring to bear. And so a lot of times bringing the students in, and my other colleagues from the other universities that spoke this morning said the same thing, is the outreach and service learning. So the campus-based faculty will have capstone classes where they do outreach in the community, and, you know, we'll have them do everything from climate change inventories using ICLEE software to helping to do different planning. So that's a long answer, but it's complicated.
Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Evan Hughes. I wondered if there are any particular success stories with local communities finding economic development on through renewable energy or energy efficiency and conservation projects.
In Wisconsin, we have one of the tribes got a federal grant and then leveraged a public-private partnership with a third party to develop solar. And part of what they did was say, we're going to put solar on 27 tribal buildings, you know, things like senior centers and rec centers and casinos, whatever. But whoever we hire to do those installations have to train some of our people who are interested so that they learn how to do solar installations and work on solar projects. So that was more of a workforce development type of program. And I don't know if you heard when I talked about a big part of what I'm trying to do now is to relate economics and jobs to clean energy. And actually, we have 25,000 just renewable energy jobs in Wisconsin. And while that might sound like a lot, they're double the amount in our surrounding states, and that's because of legislation. And so, you know, helping to promote this as a form of economic development is part of the outreach that we're working on right now. And the solar energy financing guide that I did, you know, provides some of that information as well about how much money the communities are saving by the projects that they're doing. Those types of things.
Yeah, that's very important information. Go ahead.
Especially in biomass energy, and in that area, I would expect that your agriculture extensions may be more involved than you are, or you work with them on some aspects of working with renewable energy on farms. And the other connection to biomass would be more for municipalities on digesters, or with dairy farms on digesters.
Yeah, Pennsylvania is a big dairy state, and the borough of State College was interested in exploring opportunities for a digester, a methane digester. Leveraging some of there were three primary sources that we investigated for them, including sludge from the wastewater treatment plant, biomass that they collect through their composting program and and area farms, right? Because we're surrounded by dairy farms here. Mm-hmm. And in the end, a faculty member and a team of students worked on this. They did a methane digester feasibility study for the borough, and the numbers just didn't pencil out because we're so dependent on cheap, coal-fired power plants here. Mm-hmm. So it's a project that is not moving forward at this time. That's not to say that it won't move forward in the future, but it certainly is an example of a way that the university could help the local government explore this option and inform the decision, right? It also provided great experience for the students and something that they could use in terms of, interviews and talking with future employers about how they had applied their skills to a real-world problem like this.
Did the university or the borough publish the results?
The study was just done for the borough, and the borough published the results, with their on their website. So it's available for people to see. And we can do that for any number of, community partners. Anyone who comes forward and says this is, something we're interested in, knowing if this would work for us, we can do that, That class, the beauty of this is that every semester we have students coming through who need to demonstrate their mastery of certain knowledge sets and skills, right? And there is an almost inexhaustible supply on the opposite side of communities and businesses and other partners who need to know the answers to these questions. So we look at ourselves here in this office as sort of a concierge or a brokerage. We're matching up the students and the courses and the faculty to the needs of different community partners.
So, thank you.
Like Penn State, Wisconsin's also a dairy state, and we were the leader in biodigesters in the country. And what we find is that what's driving, and they do pencil out here, but what we're finding is what drives them really isn't the economics of the biodigester or anaerobic digesters, but really the waste or the water impact issues. We have so many CAFOs now, the very large concentrated dairy farms that of 2,000 to 5,000 plus head of cattle, and it's really impacting the water supply and actually now even drinking water, and so all the digesters that have been, well, not all, but many of them that have been happening, at least from the farm side of things, have been based on being able to comply with water standards and regulations, and then also to generate energy. We also, one of the things that's been really interesting in Wisconsin is Gunderson Health System, which is our largest health provider, and they're in the western part of the state. They decided that if they're going to provide health care, then they can't be fossil fuel dependent because then they're part of the problem. So they decided to be carbon neutral. And part of what they're doing is they have bought into different systems to become carbon neutral. And so they're getting, methane from a landfill from a city near them. And they've done some solar and wind projects, but they've also invested in two biodigesters actually from afar and are getting the power from that. So here we have kind of another angle on that as well. But then in terms of extension, we have someone who was an area business specialist who's now an energy specialist who works on large agricultural energy projects. His name is Tim Bay, and so he handles that side of it. And we also have someone at Biological Systems Engineering on campus, Scott Sanford, who also works on energy and farms.
So I have a question for you. David, you started out with a question related, and you wanted to have a couple more answers from Michelle and Lyra. Did you want to rephrase that again?
Well, I'm really trying to understand sort of the institutional arrangements that enable different parts of the university to work together better across the different missions that were mentioned, research, teaching, and outreach on the one hand, within the academic side, but then also the idea of that the universities themselves, as institutions, have made commitments to various kinds of carbon goals, carbon neutrality or whatever. So I'm just trying to understand how the systems work together, how it's supported, who provides leadership, those were the questions, really.
So I can
jump in.
Michelle, do you want to address that for a second here? In your university?
Yeah, so, you know, at Penn State, we have not signed the American College and University President's Climate Commitment. However, we have made our own, set our own carbon emissions reduction goals or GHG emission goals. We have different sponsors at the top levels of the university. So sponsorship comes from the Vice President for Outreach, the Vice President for Research, the Vice President for Outreach, Research from the Provost's Office, and from our Finance and Business, which is the operations side of the house, right? So each of those units contributes and to our budget for the Sustainability Institute. And then, of course, our mission is to go out and work on the academic component, like creating new minors and majors and course development, faculty development, et cetera. We also have the outreach that my office does. There, we have efforts underway where we focus on, we support the campus in reducing its own emissions, and we just had a meeting in this building this morning of the Sustainable Operations Council that works on that, and then it's a work group. And then in terms of research, that's everywhere, right? And Penn State excels in putting together these interdisciplinary research institutes that brings faculty together and graduate students together from diverse disciplines to approach different sustainability-related topics. And it could be, climate change and health, or it could be, that we're upstream from the Chesapeake Bay and we're considered a major contributor to pollution flowing into the Chesapeake Bay, and so we have a lot of folks working on water-related issues. So it's a complex web of relationships, financial and otherwise, that kind of keeps this thing moving. It's really messy, I would say. I would imagine it's similarly messy at Wisconsin and at Ohio State. I don't know if that helps at all.
It does. Could I just ask you, just out of personal interest, what your relationship is with the Institute for Energy and the Environment?
I'm sitting down the hall from them. Like Tom Richards' office is a catty corner across the building from mine. We occupy the same floor of the same building. And so we do collaborate with them and work with them. Go ahead.
I just asked because I worked with Tom when he was at Cornell on composting and biodigesting issues.
Exactly. So it's they, in terms of how we kind of divvy up the responsibilities, the institutes, plural, the Institutes for Energy and the Environment do a lot of the heavy lifting on the research side. Where they are not as adept, I would say, is at the campus operations side of it, at the undergraduate education side of it, right? And at the some of the outreach components. They do, Ag Extension does a great job on outreach, but Ag Extension doesn't necessarily do the things that we do, right? All of these discrete projects. And there's not enough Ag Extension to go around anyway, right? They need four times the people they have in order to meet the needs of the community. So.
Well, what you're talking about is, you know, my general interest, and I know this has to work out differently in every institution, is what you just said is generically true. Like, no single part of the university covers the whole turf, because it's pretty big turf. So you have to work out the, you know, you have to come up with working relationships, and I'm interested in how these different institutions have managed to do that to get as comprehensive integration as possible, since we all know that they're, despite the general interest in working together, there are often things that get in the way of that.
The University of Wisconsin has an Office of Sustainability, and that's at the dean's or at the chancellor's level or the president's level. It's above everything, and it's through our Nelson Institute. And the Nelson Institute is comprised of faculty from all over campus, from like every department you can imagine. And so that is how it gets integrated across our campus, because there's a plan. It was voted on as a high priority for the university, and it has hundreds of faculty that are part of it and contributing to it. And there's money allocated to it.
At Ohio State, we just recently, the Board of Trustees in early April, has created a public-private partnership with the intent to become an international leader in sustainability and also provide resources to advance teaching, learning, and research. We've got a comprehensive energy management program, which is going to modernize the university's buildings throughout campus. And there's actually a total, this is going to be the largest single investment in Ohio State's academic mission. So I think what's basically happened before this is there have been various parts of the university, and of course Extension has been involved in sustainability and energy. We have an organization called OBIC, which dealt with bioproducts. It's called the Bioproduct Innovation Center. So, of course, they were dealing with biomass as well as the marketability of bioproducts. But this is going to create an umbrella for the entire university that I think all of us are going to be able to find our place in. And I think we'll coordinate things at the highest level in the university.
I have one question for all of you. So when you're working with communities and cities, is it a planned, are you following a plan of some sort? Consecutive plan, or is it random so that people are just, they have a particular need and somebody goes in there and works on that particular need, or are they coming in with some kind of a overall plan or some sort that they could follow through on from beginning to end? Anybody?
It's both. We don't discriminate against people who don't have a plan. Maybe we should, but we welcome people to start somewhere, right? We feel like if a community doesn't have its own sustainability plan or climate action plan or resiliency plan, that's okay. We just invite them to start somewhere where they feel like they can. Pennsylvania is really different than Western states and Southern states in that we have 2,500 plus local governments. The next town over has a population of close to 9,000 people. There's total staff in that local government is about 14 people, seven of them on the police force. The other seven perform all the other functions. In many places, there's one or two full-time employees and maybe a part-time employee. They simply don't have the capacity to do this, right? It's too disaggregated here. And so we welcome people. We'll start with them wherever they are, and hopefully we can move them in the direction to begin thinking about this in a comprehensive, systematic way. But we recognize they don't have the expertise or anywhere near the capacity on their staffs to do this sort of thing. They need our help.
Let me kind of rephrase the question a little bit. It's not quite that. What my question was is, did the universities themselves put together a plan that they can take to the cities and say, here's what you need to do? Or is it that the city might come to you and say, hey, you know, we need help in just this one thing, or is it both?
Yeah, it's with extension, it's, we've got an office in every county in the state of Ohio, and those people are really hardwired into the local situation and the local planning process. So oftentimes that's where the whole thing starts. We talk about a, you know, and I echo what the, I believe is Pennsylvania said, we look at a teachable moment. You know, there might be an issue that comes up in a community and we can lead them in the direction of developing a comprehensive plan or a community land use plan or a sustainability plan. Our perspective really is from a sustainability perspective in terms of community planning. The first plan we did was in 2004 in Ohio, and it was actually the first sustainable plan in Ohio. So maybe in a way we're kind of Johnny come lately, especially when you're looking at East Coast and West Coast. But it was the community of Kent, Ohio, which has had incredible success as a result of that plan. But what we try to do is engage the community, the entire community, this idea of being inclusive. So oftentimes, even if we're approached by the leaders in the community, we will go in and say, okay, where is your common vision? What would you like to accomplish? And then figure out the best way to get there.
Well, I would say that in Wisconsin, I run the Energy On Wisconsin program, and it's a collaboration with the state energy office. And years ago, in 2009-10, we actually created a program where we had communities adopt resolutions to become energy independent, which meant that they would generate 25% of their energy from renewables locally by 2025. We had over 140 communities actually pass resolutions to do that. And so they are a huge part of our pool of communities that continue to this day. And by the way, what motivated them was that we had $500,000 in funding each of those 2 years to provide grants to do clean energy planning. And and that was done with extension educators, and so they're a huge pool. But also, we also, you know, anybody who's interested or is working on this who approaches us or our county educators, you know, we will assist. And we also work with, we have a sustainable community network, and we work with them. So we have many communities that are part of a DNR-based program called Green Tier Legacy Communities, and we've got over 30 communities that passed the Natural Step or Eco-Municipality Resolutions. So we have a lot to draw from of communities that have really worked to, you know, set their own guidelines of how to move forward, and then are constantly wanting technical assistance and education with that. So it's a variety of things.
Anybody else? David, any comments?
I could ask more if nobody else has any.
No, please. We're going to end pretty quick here. I think there's so much information here, and my thoughts just to throw them out before you say anything else, David, is that we need to have more conversations. I see a lot of need in talking to lots of people across the country of figuring out how to move these things forward in different states. And it seems like a lot of you guys are really pretty well organized in moving things forward, especially like in Wisconsin. It's not particularly an easy state to be doing sustainability in. But I like to figure out ways that I can give service to help move things forward and coordinate things a little bit better. So maybe you all can be thinking about how to do that. Even working with councils of government and planning boards right now, I'm seeing a lot of them across the country that are particularly interested in moving renewables forward in their areas, and they don't quite know how to do it from them. So anyhow, it's just a thought. Go ahead, David.
Okay, a really quick question for Sherry, which is, are you part of or connected to the Mayor's Innovation Project in COWS?
I know of it, and no, I'm not directly being funded through it, but no. So.
Okay. I'm just curious because it seems like there could be a lot of overlap since the Mayor's Innovation Project in particular, I think, focuses on a lot on sustainability topics, from what I know of that. But my more self-servingly, I'm starting with some colleagues to particularly look at the planned build-out of solar energy in New York State, which if state policy comes to pass will be very significant. And we spent the past few months with a small project that was intended to identify research priorities related to that. So we'll be coming up with that. And one of them that will be, that our own team will be pursuing in the future a little more, is about the complementarities and to some extent increasing number of apparent conflicts between agriculture and commercial scale solar development. So if any of you have resources about that, I'd be really interested in it.
Crickets. I'm sorry, David. I might have to refer you over to our ag extension here, but it's outside of my bailiwick.
Okay.
You know, I would say that when a state law passes, if you have policy, that moves things so quickly, it makes it so much easier. And so when we had a prior administration, you know, and we had actually the state energy office became an office of energy independence, which we have no longer. But that, you know, having money, having a program, having a state push, both on the economic development side, you know, bringing all the stakeholders together at a governor level task force to move things forward. I mean, that makes the biggest difference. So I think that, you know, there's so much going on in New York State anyway, but if that passes, it's the perfect moment to help, you know, promote things, make things happen, and develop programs, and the amount outreach opportunities just mushrooms. And man, I would love to have that happen again. But what I'm finding here is that in spite of the lack of that, the local governments are the areas of action. And they're saying, if the state doesn't do it, that's fine. It's important. We need to do it. We need to do it for both attraction and retention of people to our area, to resilience, you know, for our economy, and for our future generations, and also preparing our kids for the new workforce. And so, I in doing the research to put together the solar energy financing guide, the amount of initiatives coming out of local governments, that is where the action is, and it's. It's tremendous.
One question for you guys. Is there any coordination between the Extension Office and the university students going into the cities and towns that you're actually located in? Anybody?
There is in New York.
Okay.
We're working with our extension counterparts in Allegheny County, particularly in Pittsburgh and in Philadelphia. They are identifying community partners and community priorities, and we are developing pathways to help deploy our students around a whole array of topics. So that includes local food systems, urban ag, dealing with stormwater runoff issues, renewable energy and microgrids. So yes, I mean, our ag extension folks know their communities, they're deeply embedded, and they really can create great opportunities to connect our students to those efforts.
It seems like that would be a good path to go.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to end it now. We'll reconvene again another time and finish up on some of these topics. So thanks, everybody, for coming, and appreciate it. Good information. I'll get this out as a recording so other people can hear it. And you know,
well, great work, everybody. I'm really impressed.
I am too. We need to stay in touch because I feel like I could use those tools from Ohio and Wisconsin to advance the agenda here in Pennsylvania.
And I feel the same way about both of you too. I mean, it's really neat that we're kind of filling in some gaps that some of us have in our programming in the state. So I can see, you know, real ways to collaborate in bringing these programs to our other states.
Absolutely.
I'll be bringing in some more universities like you gals. I knew for sure that you would really. You gain a lot from meeting each other. You're all three of you extraordinary people. And I want to talk to each of you individually to find out what I can do to help move these things forward, because I think the more information and the way you can circumvent a lot of the problems you've had and cut to the chase if you've been successful in certain areas would really be useful for everybody. So,
And I should just say that every other year, Extension, and we just had one actually April 5th, or several days in there, has a national extension energy conference or meeting where
right.
people do share what they're doing. I wasn't able to go this year because I was actually doing the state one on the exact same day, but other of my colleagues went. And so there is some sharing, at least in extension, happening through that opportunity.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and I think there's a real interest and kind of an impetus to develop some national, you know, to build on that and develop some national networks relating to energy development. So, yeah, I think that's been a wonderful vehicle for people to share with each other.
Okay, well, we're going to go ahead and end it now, and thanks all of you for presenting and attending, and I'll be in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Bye.
Bye.
Right now. Bye-bye.